crosstalk, the unintentional transfer of signals between communication channels, a casual conversation.
This is a video game crosstalk episode 029, the monthly, or at least roughly monthly, podcast of gamers talking about tech, science, and whatever else comes to mind. I'm your host, Anthony Rossi, and with me this episode is cosplayer and 3D printing enthusiast Ray Ummerly of Forceworks Costuming. Ray, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, and as we were talking before recording just a few minutes ago, it's been a while since I've recorded a episode properly like this. I had to take a little bit of a break because of the holiday season in December, and things just got too busy, as happens for a lot of content creators. Just, you got to spend time with the family. You have to make time for your personal life and things like that.
I had the same issues as well. There was a, you know, trying to get some projects done during breaks. And one of the problems, well, you know this, you have a small child. I've got two children myself, but you have to prioritize or you don't get to do the other fun things that you want to do. So,
yeah, there's been several instances where I've been itching to either write a blog article or do a little bit more interaction on social media. But a very touching comment came from my brother-in-law's girlfriend, and she might have noticed I was getting a little frustrated, as one can do with a two-year-old son. It happens on occasion. Yeah, people may not know that. But she just kind of, to the side when no one else was around, she just kind of looked at me, looked up and said, "There will come a day when you're going to put him down for the last time." I'm like, oh.
That pulls at the heart, because mine are 14 and 10 now. And there's moments when I look at that and go, it's not going to be much longer. And it's that hits a little hard. It does make me hug them a little tighter, or maybe acquiesce on a demand.
Yeah. And it's things like that where I do, you know, breathe in, breathe out. Mm-hmm. The internet will be there later. Spend some time reading to your child.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because every once in a while, I'm a big fan of like older music, you know, 60s, 70s, that kind of thing. But every once in a while, you get like the Cat Stevens and the kind of the Cats in the Cradle and whatever comes on. And I'm listening to that. And now as a dad, the moments that I've told my son, oh, just give me, you know, 5 more minutes, or not today, not right now, or I've got a call coming up, can that wait? And I listen to that song, I'm like, oh, sorry, I mean, it's one of those just like I'm becoming that guy, and it does kind of you genuflect a little bit on that and want to make sure you don't become that person. So
you really don't. And it's not that my dad wasn't around. He was. He just worked second shift in a warehouse. He worked 1 to 10-ish. He pulled a lot of overtime so we could go on vacations and stuff like that. So during the week, I really didn't see my father. On the weekends, he made sure he was present. So I don't want to try to pull that angle like in the least.
Right.
But I do understand to a limited extent the whole idea of, if you have the opportunity, take that opportunity.
Yeah. And it's funny because my father was actually much older. So, you know, yay for dad. He was 50 when he met my mother. She was 26. More power to him. But by the time I came around and was getting, he was obviously much older, you know, well-established in his career, but, you know, he worked long hours. We lived outside of Cleveland, Ohio. I grew up in the Midwest. But, you know, he would go early in the morning. He was on the road driving. late at night, he would come back. And you know, it just, we didn't have a lot of those opportunities. And it's funny because as I got older and as I got into college and those kind of, then I'm starting to find my own life. And you don't necessarily come back to that. And he passed away when I was 23. We never really got to have that time where we both kind of met in the middle. And it's something I want to make sure, at least with my children, that we never have those regrets.
Mm-hmm. I momentarily chuckled during your story, and yes. Was noticed, it was the fact that you mentioned that you grew up in the Midwest, and again, before we started recording, you mentioned that you have an old fashioned sitting next to you.
Yes, absolutely.
It's from Wisconsin. I am quite familiar with the old fashioned. I was not expecting it to be as tasty as it is the first time I had one.
It really depends on who makes it, though, because I've had some really horrible old fashions, and typically find that there's a correlation between either geography or the age of the bartender in terms of how good your old fashioned actually is. So,
do you drink your sweet?
I do. I tend to go sweet and a little heavier on the orange bitters, but it is one of those, like, I'm a fan of the classics. So,
there was a period when, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I just went on a tear of trying to mix my own drinks and grabbed one of my old cocktail booklets that every college kid grabs because he thinks he's going to be a bartender at parties. And then he never mixes a thing. But just went through that a little bit and tried to make some old timey cocktails because those were crafted in the days where people made mixed drinks that tasted good.
Right.
Not something trendy like any of the new ones that have come out in the past, I don't know how many years. Like an Appletini is an abomination.
I know.
Yes. Most and drinks are abominations, or just whatever hard alcohol combined with whatever soda you may have on hand. I mean, a gin and tonic is quite nice. A cranberry and vodka is quite nice, but outside of those, you're kind of just getting into grab some whiskey, grab something that doesn't taste like complete disgustingness and see what happens.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm a fan of, I like a good bourbon, a good whiskey. I love gin and tonics, those kind of things, and Boodles is my preferred London dry gin now, but it's one of those, like, I think it's a difference between drinking for the taste and the comfort and just the socialization and the feeling versus drinking to get, like, lit. I'm not, I'm too old for that. Back it off.
Yeah. Likewise, good man. Likewise. I just don't care anymore. I haven't cared in a long time.
Yep.
So 10 and 14, what are your kids up to these days?
Well, right now, getting back in the swing of school in January after the holidays, but, So one is a freshman in high school. And the other one is in his last year of elementary school before he goes to middle school. And they're both tech geeks. I'm raising them as young nerds. I figure any offspring of mine needs to represent, but we're trying to balance that against some of the physical things. So they both recently started karate, which is at least good for them to have some physical outlet. They both wanted to do it. I've done martial arts for years myself. So,
oh, wonderful.
And, yeah. They're not going to do, they've never been good at team sports. Like my youngest is like soccer for him. When you stop just chasing the ball around, the game didn't become fun anymore. Mm. And my oldest in little league would be the one who'd be in the playing infield in the diamond doing math equations in the dirt while he was waiting for the ball. So we realized at a young age that just wasn't going to play well.
If that's just not in their bag, fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm supportive. But I do want them to have some activity, not just on the couch or on the computer.
You know, and that's a conversation I've had with plenty of people because my son, he has no choice. He's going to be a dork. He's going to be a geek. Between myself and his mother, he's going to be a geek. And as much as I do enjoy my gaming, I've done plenty of physical activity in my youth. And I used to run like a 5K a month. Mm-hmm. I haven't done much exercising or running in the past couple of years because that kid takes up all of my time. Oh, good Lord. But I mean, I'll get back into it, and I absolutely support the idea of getting out and, yes, scrape up your knees, scrape up your elbows. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to punish you, but go cause a little bit of trouble out there.
Mm-hmm. And that was a hard lesson too, because my first one, it was very much kids' gloves. And he spent a lot more time with his mother. I was working in the city at the time and, startups and those kind of things. But, it was anything that happened, it was like, oh my God, major crisis. By the time the second child came around, It's like, is he bleeding? Is there a bone exposed? Nah, okay, he's fine.
He's fine.
You kind of get used to, okay, what is an emergency? What's not? Mm-hmm. And I do think it kind of shows in their character, like the older one, even now, will like stub his toe and he's down for the count, whereas the little one will just pick himself up, dust himself off and keep going. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we got one. So,
okay. Yeah, we'll see what happens with our little man. We had him a little bit later in life. So I got to see how all my friends and family were able to raise their children. And for the most part, if the kid falls or like slams something, it's more along the lines of, are you bleeding? No, then you're fine. Although there is still the panic with the firstborn, because if he starts having a meltdown, I am sprinting because that's what a first time dad does.
Oh, absolutely. We literally never went to, like, the first couple of years of our first child. We didn't go to restaurants. We didn't go to movies. We didn't go to anywhere public where if there was something that would happen that we would have to react. Because part of it was, you know, I didn't trust myself in those situations. And another part was I just didn't want to have to expose anybody else to us in those situations. So we were very insular for quite a few years. It was almost coming out of like, oh, my God, that's the son. We can be outside now. He's old enough.
Yes. Luckily for us, and this is hysterical, we have a Greek diner like a half a mile away.
Okay.
The only reason why we drive to this diner is because we need to cross a like 4-lane major thoroughfare. So we have walked. We have, you know, hit the walk button and cross the street a few times, but typically we drive. But having a Greek diner so close to the house, we just went there all the time for breakfast on the weekends to begin with.
Yeah.
Went there while Stephanie was pregnant. Went there while he was an infant. Went there while it's still going. And we're at the point now where we walk in and he runs up and gives the hostess a big hug.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So he's his own little celebrity. But I totally understand not going out because it's what time is it? What time is his bedtime? What are the chances we're going to be able to get food before he decides that it's more fun to throw his food around and run around the restaurant than it is actually, you know, eat something.
Yeah, we used to decide it in advance. It's like, look at the menu online if you can, because once we get in, you've got 5 minutes to order. That's it. We're not taking, you know, no, you don't get water and coffee. You get one of the, it was, you know, we just had a game plan. We knew we had a very limited window of opportunity. So.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the conversation for a little bit. because I'm sure we could go on trading dad stories for a while.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's not why people are tuning in. So
you know what? Jacob has grown up with this podcast. We've heard him develop. He is currently 2 and we are full fledged in the terrible 2s and meltdowns for every possible reason at this point.
Well, yeah, actually, for us, it was funny. We didn't have the 2s. The 3s were worse.
That's what a lot of people say.
Yeah, I don't know. There was something about that, but
right now we just had a meltdown because he was given a bath and we had to wash his hair. And washing his hair is just meltdown city. Yeah. So I had to run downstairs really quick, just hold him up while my wife kind of just rinsed him off. And sounds like we're good. I'm not hearing anything coming up from the main floor, so
good. We'll knock on wood there for you.
Yeah, right. Where's it? There we go. Yeah. So, Ray.
Yes.
What do you do outside of being a cosplayer and 3D printing enthusiast? We're going to talk about a little bit of that, but what do you do for a day job?
This could either be incredibly mundane or incredibly interesting, depending on what side of the coin you fall on. I'm the chief data protection officer, what some people would call the chief privacy officer, which is taking a lot more importance now in our current online culture.
For
a large global e-commerce company based here in Connecticut. So we are all over the world. I manage the privacy program, making sure that we're doing the right things with the data that we have, complying with law, regulation. I'm a half technologist and half lawyer is kind of the best way to look at it. And then I also have some other aspects of the company around records management, business continuity, crisis, and that kind of thing. But the privacy stuff takes up my full time for the most part, 80 to 90% of my work.
So in the show notes, we were able to talk back and forth a bit a few times. And quote, or when I ask, are you open to talking about your day job? Your response is, quote, yes, as boring as it may be for your listeners. And really, this is something that I actually do want to talk about a little bit, because one of the reasons why I started this podcast, and it's actually part of my elevator speech while I'm at cons and talking to people live, that one of the reasons I started this show was because all of the people that I know that work in the science and tech industries are gamers and geeks as well. Mm-hmm. So here you are, gainfully employed in the technology industry, and you're also a huge dork. Yep. So, and I say that lovingly.
No, and I'm the first to admit it. In fact, I have an office in Stamford, Connecticut. So, I'm not giving you my actual address, but I'm in Stamford.
Right.
But in my office, I have Stormtrooper helmets, a Darth Vader helmet. It's funny because people were a little taken aback when they first saw how I decorated the office, because it wasn't usual for somebody to just be kind of out there with it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I got nothing to hide. I'm a nerd. I'm a dork. I'm a geek, whatever you want to call it. And so I have everybody from the guy who walks the floor for IT to the person delivering the mail sometimes just pop in and go, hey, did you see the latest sci-fi movie, or did you see the latest whatever? And we'll have a conversation. It's great. Yeah, they're out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we are out there. I've got a few Pop Funkos sitting at my desk, and I don't usually go for the super popular ones. I want the ones that, like, whatever my little niche is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I've actually got for those who have watched Full Metal Alchemist, I've got a Alex Louise Armstrong Pop Funko at my desk. Have you watched that anime?
I have. That's really cool.
Okay. So then it will also make people all sorts of warm inside to know that as you turn him, they actually embedded a little bit of glitter into his skin so that he sparkles.
Nice touch.
See, and people who understand or have watched that anime, the fact that there is a large shirtless man flexing on my shelf, and for some odd reason he sparkles, that just brings smiles together. Yeah.
Well, because that could go two ways when they ask you. So I understand.
Yeah, so that's one of them. Just let it be, and just embrace what you enjoy. So. Privacy. There's a lot going on in privacy.
Yes, there is.
These days, it just keeps getting pushed farther and farther to the front. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you what specific projects that you're working on because,
Of course,
duh. But
well, I can kind of give you an idea of like some of the stuff that's like kind of keeping us up now, because it really has. Most of the listeners and yourself, you're probably aware of like Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and that whole scandal that came out last year, where it was basically Facebook giving access to Facebook data to a third party, that third party using that information to subsequently, to some extent, manipulate, right, voter opinions and those kind of things.
Yes, yes.
So a lot of what has spawned from that is we already had a rather arduous European regulation, the General Data Protection Regulation, that was coming down the pike, that was really about giving users control again about the information that companies and businesses and so forth had upon the, about them and what they could do with it. Now we're seeing it in the US, which we hadn't really seen before. So California has passed a rather interesting Consumer Privacy Act. And the funny thing about it is you usually think of legislation as something that takes years, right, to kind of craft and draft. This one, just to bore people for like 30 seconds on the history, this one's a really interesting bill. And if you don't live in California, Google this and look this up. So essentially what happened was there's a rather wealthy real estate developer in California who had some concerns about privacy as it relates to the information that companies had about him, went out and got a petition and got all these signatures to actually put a referendum for a significant privacy act on the California ballot in November of last year.
Okay.
This put the entire technology community, state, whatever, in a complete panic, because what could potentially pass at a referendum level, at a public level, would probably not be favorable to what a lot of the technology companies and businesses wanted to continue to do.
Most likely not, no.
No. And so what ended up happening is they actually appealed through the state legislature and others, and they came up with a compromise. And so the state legislature, within a week, put together a bill that would be signed by the governor with a concession from the developer, the real estate developer, that, hey, I'll pull my referendum from the ballot in November if you pass this bill. So 1 week An entire legislative bill was composed, signed into law by the governor. And since that time, we've had no less than a half a dozen amendments and all these other things, even before like the ink is dry. So it's it's one of those like it's at the forefront of everybody's mind. But the impact, I think, of some of these things is still to be understood and seen. So a lot of my job now is kind of looking at how do we interpret it? Where do we think it's going to go? And then ultimately, how do we adjust or change our strategy to not only comply with the law, but make sure that we're doing the right thing for our brand reputation and what people's opinions would be. So,
well, it's got to be tough, specifically on the social media platforms or any other platform which are free to use.
Right.
Because if it is free to use or no monetary cost from the user, that company needs to make money somehow just to exist. And that, if I understand things correctly, and let me know if I'm on the right path here, the way that those companies make money is by selling your information or selling your, I guess I'll call it your data analytics, your what you like, what you interact with, what your trends are, that kind of stuff. Is that overgeneralized?
No, I mean, it's accurate. Yeah, I think there's two ways. There's a direct monetization play sometimes for the personal data. And if you look at like some of the privacy statements when you sign up for these sites and services, you'll usually see at least a paragraph there where they talk about sharing it with third parties. And when they share it with third parties, there's a broad swath of things that they may share it with them for, some directly related to the service, but some not so much, and just to make money. But more importantly on a lot of these is really around, you know, targeted advertising as well. And you've seen this when you go, I mean, I have a conversation with my wife about buying a new Dremel. I sit down at my computer and all of a sudden Facebook is giving me ads for a Dremel. Amazon is telling me I want a Dremel. Here's a lightning deal for a Dremel. All that just happens in a matter of what feels like moments. And a lot of that information sharing is where the real monetization is coming from. It's really about behaviors, proclivities, interests, and so forth. They're less concerned now with the, hi, I'm Ray Emmerly and I live at such and such place. But it's, I'm Ray Emmerly, I like Game of Thrones and Battlestar Galactica, maybe I eat beets and I watch black bears, whatever it is. And I'm pulling a Dwight Schrute reference on you there.
Okay.
But it's one of those like, you know, that's what they really want, because that's where they're going to get to your pocketbook, right? Through your interests.
Right. And that's pretty much what I've assumed, because if you have not seen this in action, this is for my listeners. If you have not seen this in action, I've told someone to do this and like the results are 100% happen every single time. Go onto your computer, look up something that you have zero interest in, something that's completely outside of your wheelhouse. If you're a health nut, just start looking up stuff for, you know, some fast food joint. Or if you have like zero interest in auto racing, just start looking up NASCAR stuff. Go back to your Facebook, like, either maybe even within an hour or so, and see what ads start popping up. And that is basically what's happening with your social media stuff. It's not so much that, like you said, hi, my name is this, this is my location, this is my, this isn't even like my credit card or banking information. They'll get to that through the targeted advertising where, hey, I see that you're looking up this information, you're looking up a lot of video games, here's some other video game stuff. Hey, I see that you're interacting with some, say, Dungeons and Dragons stuff. Here are, what's the company called? Wormwood. I'm sure people see, those dice boxes look so beautiful. And yes, I surf their site every once in a while. I can't justify spending $200 on that so elegant and exquisite custom made dice box.
Well, it's interesting because I'm a firm believer in, and even working in more of the e-commerce space, but especially with the social media platforms. And I'm an avid user. You know this. I've got a Facebook page. I promote things. I put pictures up. I overshare probably. But the reality is on those platforms, if you're not paying for the platform itself, you're likely the product. Ultimately,
right.
Because you're the one who they're making money off of. You know, they're luring you in with this, okay, stay connected, share your information, learn from others, whatever. But ultimately, where they're making their dollars is off that information that you're sharing, how they can share that to others to monetize. And it's an interesting dynamic when you think of it. Nothing is truly free in this life. That's a very cynical thing, but It's apropos.
Yeah, it's cynical, true, but no, it is accurate. And sometimes when I think about it, I kind of don't mind it in certain ways.
Right.
Because honestly, yes, I do want the next, say, we'll be talking about the Game of Thrones trailer, but yes, I do want that popping up on my timeline. Yes, if I do get the money, you know, I would enjoy buying some custom, you know, dice sets or, you know, just things like that. So when they do give you the advertised or the targeted advertisements, sometimes, yeah, sure, I'll take that. Yep. I guess where sometimes, and I hesitate to even mention politics on the show,
but of course,
when you get into certain discussions, you begin to create your own personalized echo chamber because of the same, I don't even know what to call them, because of the same routine subscripts, whatever you want to call them. Right. If you respond to these types of news articles, just like products, they're going to show you more of the same or similar news articles or products.
Yeah, and that's been kind of the more ongoing debate, right? So in the first part of it, there's been a lot of studies, and I look at multiple benchmarks and research every year on these topics. There's a direct correlation between somebody's concerns about their privacy and what data they're willing to give up against the value that they perceive they're getting in return, right? So in the first example, when you're talking, you don't mind seeing those ads because those are things that are potentially abuse to you. And honestly, fairly innocuous, right? I mean, it's an advertisement. You can choose to ignore it.
Yes.
But when it comes to things where the news feeds that are coming up at the top of your feed or the voices that you're hearing at the top of your feed tend to be in the kind of the same, I like the way you put it, the same echo chamber. And mm-hmm. that's where it becomes more problematic, because now ultimately a algorithm written by human beings working for a company trying to make money are determining
what voices. That was the word I was looking for.
they're determining what voices you should hear. And that's where it becomes a problem. And I see that more and more where headlines that pop up for certain people are more from extremist sites, because that tends to be the conversation topic that they tend to gravitate towards, but they're insulated from the other voice and opinion that counteracts that. And that's the challenge, is we drive ourselves further into these corners and less from a positive discourse between parties.
Mm. Well, we're definitely not going to solve this problem on this on this podcast, but
I need more old fashions for that. Absolutely. So.
Yeah. I might suggest a different podcast for my buddy Chris that does stories from a bar. I'll let you know if you ever want to do.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've actually had the opportunity to be a guest on his podcast 2 times, actually. Just recently for Christmas, we did a nice little Christmas episode. We talked about all sorts of crazy, funny Christmas stories. And also Father's Day, I was a guest on the podcast. That was fantastic. We went to a local brewery, drank beers outside on their patio, and we told, well, we had 120, but there were a few repeats. So over 100 dad jokes over the course of the episode.
Wow.
Fabulous, right?
I don't even know if I could have survived that, because my humor is so bad that my nieces don't even call them dad jokes. They call them uncle jokes, which to them is worse than dad jokes. So
something worse than hold on. I'm scribbling that in my notes. Uncle jokes. Okay. So cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move into that. Let's just talk about that. What are some cosplays that you've done in the notes? It sounds like there's an interesting story here. So you tell me, how did you get into cosplay?
Yeah, so let's start there, and then we'll kind of build back to kind of the portfolio of stuff that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into cosplay late. So we've already kind of established, I grew up and still am a nerd and a geek and so forth. But a lot of my interests on that front were tied into things, you know, toy collecting, watching cartoons, retro stuff, online gaming, console gaming, whatever. In 2014, unfortunately, my mother passed unexpectedly. And I'd lost my father when I was in my early 20s. And my mother was actually in Tennessee. I was living in Connecticut. Didn't find out about it until a neighbor had contacted somebody that I knew through a Facebook post, because they, you know, they didn't have any way to contact me. But it was a difficult situation. So we went down. And I ended up having to manage the estate and everything that was going on with that. And it was several months of just a lot of stuff, a lot of heavy lifting. Mm. And I needed a little bit of an escape. And, you know, I had at that time, one of the things that I was primarily interested in was Star Wars before the latest run of movies kind of ruined that for me. But, but you know, I was getting kind of back into that a little bit, and I came across some stuff around, you know, some Star Wars costumes, and I started looking into it a little bit and found myself gravitating towards Darth Maul, which, you know, was the best thing about the Phantom Menace.
Right.
And I decided to make a Darth Maul costume. And I did that. That was my very first cosplay and costume. I did everything from crafting my own horns out of air dry clay. I spent hours upon hours in the mirror doing my own makeup. Even at the final run, the makeup was like a 2-hour thing in the mirror kind of deal. All the clothes, finding the sabers and everything. And I just kind of dove into it, but it gave me an outlet and it gave me an escape. And it's funny because a lot of times when you find those escapes, they end up becoming your passions. Mm-hmm. And that just started me on the trail that I'm on now. And so every costume that I've done since then, I did 7 different costumes for Star Wars, some of which I was in the 501st, still am in the 501st, though. At some point in time, they'll revoke my membership because of my activity level. But right now, I still have the card. They haven't taken it from me. But I did 7 Star Wars costumes, including Kylo Ren from The Force Awakens. And then I've done Star-Lord, different versions of that, Ant-Man, and so forth. But each one of these, each build, I try to make sure, one, the character has to speak to me to some regard. And then mm-hmm. I also try to make sure that I always apply some new techniques for every costume or meld techniques in a way I haven't before. So I'm always improving because you understand this, you know, engineer background kind of thing. It's like, if I'm going to do it again, I have to do it better than it was before, right? And continue to build upon that. So that was a long-winded answer to a very short question.
But well, hey, so start off as just a creative outlet, as escapism.
Exactly. And because I always had, you know, creative interests, but a lot of times I found myself in professional life gravitating towards more mundane things. So I have a degree, my undergrad degree. I do have a master's as well, but my undergrad degree is in creative writing and film studies, actually. It's an English degree. Well, once I graduated from college, I realized that it was really difficult to make money with that degree, unless you hit the right note somewhere. So I went back into IT to basically pay the bills. And then that kind of led into my current career path, which went from IT to information security, ultimately into privacy and more on the legal aspect. But with that, it was always important for me to still maintain that creative outlet. Mm-hmm. And most of that, again, was more passive to begin with, like online gaming. I was huge into things like EverQuest back in 1998 when that first came out, and the Heels of Ultima, Dark Age of Camelot, a lot of the MMOs. So my character creation and those kind of things went into those formats. But again, much more passive. I wasn't actually doing things other than what was being done through the keyboard. This was my first foray back into doing more active creation. And now it's just, and you alluded to it, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, later, the 3D printing. It's just continued to kind of grow into now my hands are constantly dirty with something related to a costume, for better or for worse. So
it's not a bad way to be.
No, there's worse things. Really? I tell my wife that, at least. But
over the past several months, I've actually been trying to work on a TEDx talk to have here in Albany. And the concept of it is how geeks or geek culture is inspiring a new generation of artists. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I plan on discussing in this talk is the creative outlet of it all, where even if you're not a professional artist or a professional developer or a professional craftsperson, you have this opportunity where it's something that you enjoy. You are painting, drawing, crafting, playing the music of something that you enjoy and you feel a connection to. Mm-hmm. And it's just another way for the arts in general, which just benefits society in all sorts of different ways. So it's really inspiring to hear things like that because the arts are tough. I have some friends and family that pursue the arts as a full-time career. It is very difficult to make creative, like purely creative art, your full-time gig. If you get into the arts, and I tell people this, you're going to have to get into either commission work or commercial work, where it's, you get to flex your creative muscles a little bit, but for the most part, it's more flyer and poster design, or I had one friend who was designing the graphics on different servingware and dishes. It's not the most rewarding thing, but it takes a creative streak. You need to come up with the new designs, and it's required. So having something where just creating fan art, which I guess cosplay kind of would be, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Would you consider that a fan art?
I think so. I think, there's a lot of expression in cosplay. And, when we say cosplay, I know there's like this, always this general debate between cosplay versus costuming versus what it's, we're using cosplay in the general sense, like the most general sense. There's a lot of expression there. And I found that, from a lot of the cosplayers that I met and very talented people, and again, it is so accessible because you can bring so much of it that you can create, maybe somebody else has created that you've acquired or whatever it is. It's a something borrowed, something blue, something new, whatever, that kind of thing at the wedding. But there's so much that people pour into it because usually the characters that they choose to cosplay as tend to have a personal connection at some level. There's something about that character that just resonates either because of personal experience or personality or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then their own take on, what level that they put into the costume itself, just the way, something may drape or the color that they chose, there's so much to it that people kind of, if you're outside of it, look at it and go, oh, that's just a costume, whatever, big deal. But if you really take the time, there's a lot of heart and emotion that goes into that people maybe don't appreciate as much.
Oh, sure. Because if you're choosing to cosplay as a particular character, you're going to have to spend a lot of time looking at models and drawings of that particular character. So just to choose that particular character, it's intrinsic, I guess I would say, that you would feel some type of personal connection, be it their attitude or something about them, why you would choose to do that particular, unless it's just either a commission or you enjoy the challenge of a particular look or something like that. But for the casual level, it would have to be someone that you feel a connection with, which really makes me unsteady about myself, since the only time I've attempted a cosplay is Handsome Jack from Borderlands. Not sure what that says about me, but, we're going to go with it.
I feel like I should pull up a couch and charge you by the hour if we start talking about that. But with that said, I absolutely agree. But I also think, it is one of those, like, for me, every costume for me is a significant investment. I'm fortunate, right? I do have a successful day job. I'm not looking to make money off of this per se. This is an expensive hobby for me. My builds tend to run 3, 4, 5 months. Most of my costumes end up being in the range of $1,500 to $2,500 or more dollars by the time I'm done. Because a lot of it is a combination of doing and redoing and retrying, and I'll experiment. I'll buy 3 or 4 things sometimes to see if I can use it as a base to modify and build from, and end up having to scrap it, right? Because it's just not the right thing. But with that said, I think going back to your point about kind of having to work from, the commercial design perspective, where you're kind of driving by some sort of spec or whatever, I think that's one of the things that ultimately why, when I got into that Star Wars group, and with the 501st, I was excited to get in, but primarily because I wanted the challenge of getting into it. Right. And it was one of those. Okay. I wore Darth Maul. I actually took Darth Maul to Dragon Con in 2015. And I had gone to Dragon Con back in 95 and 96 before the explosion, back when it was at the Hilton, and it was primarily focused on literary guests. It was long before it ever became the cosplay convention it is now, which really exploded after around 2003 or so. But I took it to Dragon Con. And I ran into members of the 501st, and they're like, that costume is incredible. And at that point, I'd graduated to a full latex prosthetic headpiece and all these other things, and molding wax and things to make it look right, because I wasn't going to shave my head. I liked the costuming, but not that much. and they were like, hey, you should think about joining. So it became a challenge. And so when I finally got in, it was like, okay, let's keep building costumes. And then I also enjoyed the charity aspect and doing the children's hospitals and those kind of things.
Oh, fabulous.
Mm-hmm. But what ultimately kind of, took away the fun for me was as you get into things like the costume reference libraries, which are really just design specs, right? It has to look like this, and this is what your dimensions are and everything else. It almost became like a model kit for me. It's like it's all spelled out already. So a lot of the aspects of the design and research and trial and error that I had come to love about the art wasn't there, and the challenge diminished, if that makes sense.
It became mechanical.
Yes, yes. And so I started moving away and doing more like the Marvel characters and those, because I could do my own spin on that, or doing things from animated shows. I've done Ice King from Adventure Time, the Simon Petrikov version, or Grunkle Stan from Gravity Falls, which is another great cartoon show. And, you know, things that I could do some research on and make it my own and whatever without being kind of beholden to that mechanical outline or engineering plan. And ultimately, I'm the hardest judge on myself. I didn't need somebody else judging whether or not I was worthy per se to wear it. So,
well, and I suppose if you're running with someone like the 501st, if they're supposed to be presenting an authentic Star Wars persona, then it makes a little bit more sense in that capacity.
Agreed.
To be a little bit more controlled with what the appearances are.
Absolutely, because you have to be consistent, right? Or else it under, if you don't have that consistency and you don't have that level of accuracy, then it just kind of takes away the entire underpinnings of the group itself. And it's completely understandable. But I tell people, you know, I work well with groups. I don't tend to work well in groups because of things like that. So.
Interesting. So we've mentioned 3D printing a few times, and you've got a few videos and pictures up on your Facebook and Instagram account. I'll give us a quick sample of what you got working in your basement.
Actually, it's funny. That's actually in the my home office right next door to my master bedroom, which my wife absolutely loves the sound of 3D printers at night. Okay, I bought her a white noise generating machine for Christmas, so it's all good. I have two Ender 3 printers right now, which are about a 9-inch build area, and I have one Creality S5, which is like a 500mm, about 20-inch build area. Printer. And so I've been using those. It was funny because the bigger one was the first one that I got. Anybody looking to get into 3D printing, by the way, I would not recommend going with that one as your first printer. Start with the smaller ones and work your way up. but you know, when I got into that, it was primarily I wanted to be able to do things like build helmets and things that typically I would end up having to either get a cast from somebody or maybe buy something from China and then modify it. And then it became more of as I started looking into a lot of the modeling, it became more of how can I assemble things that I couldn't assemble before. So you've seen a lot of the stuff I've been doing for Fallout recently.
Yes.
A lot of those are multi-part builds where I'm building it across three separate printers at any time just to save time. And then assembling and finishing and painting and so forth. And, you know, I've done laser pistols, 10mm. I'm working on a full suit of the light combat armor now and finishing that up. And it's been fun. I've only been doing it for about a year. But I jump into most things full bore, 2 feet, research wise, time wise and everything. So my learning curve is a little shorter than most, I think.
Okay. Oh, it's got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. How is your Fallout coming through?
So far, so good. Honestly, if I would have just stopped with the Vault Dweller, I probably would be long done by now.
No, you have to create every prop in the game, don't you?
Yeah. So at this point, I've printed and finished stim packs. I've made my own Mentats containers, buff out jars that I ordered special bottles for and made my own labels. And the main thing I'm trying to work on right now, and I'm hoping to have all this done and be able to bring it to Empire State Comic Con, which I plan to come back to in Albany in April.
Nice.
Is I'm doing a Fallout Vault Dweller Soul Survivor mashup with a first Avenger World War II Captain America. So the kind of the Bucky rescue outfit, you know, where he goes in and saves him. So I've got the leather jacket, the helmet, and I'm using the combat armor painted in the color scheme. And I even ordered from a DOT supplier down in Georgia. They made me a Interstate 95 in Massachusetts road sign. It's from the actual stock that I'm going to convert and turn into the shield for Cap. And
that is amazing.
Hoping to bring that. So
I saw the Interstate sign. I wasn't sure like what you used to make it. That was from the DOT.
Yes, that's actually – so the guy supplies the DOT contractors in the Georgia area. Okay, so the
contractor for the DOT.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and the issue is, so it's like 8mm like aluminum. And so I'm trying to figure out how to bend it because I want to have that kind of curve that you see in the heater shield. And I've tried a couple different methods, and I'm so – I'm so hesitant to chew too much because I don't want to ruin the face of the shield because it has the, right. the and so it's been a little bit of a challenge. I still got to sort that one out, but
all right, so definitely check out your Instagram for that. It's quite the accomplishment. Okay, time for an Audible interlude. For you, the listeners of Video Game Crosstalk Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/VGXTpod and sign up for your free trial and download one of over 180,000 titles, such as Dungeon Lord by Hugo Huesca. Once again, that is audibletrial.com/VGXTpod. All right, so starting with this new year, I'm switching things up a little bit. I'm going to try to get these podcast episodes down to a more reasonable time length. As much as I love talking with my guests and I just love nerding out for extended periods of time, I understand that 2 to 2.5 hours for a single episode is a lot of audio for someone to consume. We're already at, we've been going for a while.
Yeah, I was about to apologize for that now. So, continue.
But that's the thing. That's where all the best conversation comes in place, is when you fly off on tangents and you expand upon things. So I don't want to limit it too much, but in order to conserve time, I'm actually going to combine the tech and geekery topic. So rather than talking tech and science for a segment and then gaming and geekery, we're just going to lump this together for tech and geekery. So got a couple of articles here and we can push through these fairly quickly. So this one is big news to me, just of the game itself, but the local impact as well. Destiny, or not so much Destiny, but Bungie has severed ties with Activision. And this just, I mean, obviously on my news feeds, again, the whole, what are you interested in and what pops up on your news feed based on your interactions. So of course this was just like all over the place on both my Twitter and Facebook. So Activision served as a publisher. I can't speak to the fullest extent of how these business relationships are organized,
right?
But I mean, Activision, pretty big company, and they served as the publisher, from my understanding, means that they aided with the, I guess, duplication and distribution of the product.
Well, and more than that, too, because in a lot of these relationships, and I know in some other research with Activision and Bungie on this, these are some articles I was looking at after the news broke. You know, they were providing like subsidiary development shops to do some of the support for that.
Yes.
You know, so they could offload some of the work. And of course, they also, because they were the publisher, there was a lot of, they were dictating things like the release schedule and when things had to be done and so forth, which to some extent may explain, you know, some of the things that we saw with Destiny 2 that people weren't that great about, and the microtransaction systems and other things of that nature. So it's, they had a lot of pull here. It'll be interesting now that Bungie's kind of on its own again, or going to be on its own again, what changes.
Yeah. Back when Destiny 2 first came out, I wrote a few articles about my general impressions of the game. And just like Destiny 1, it was really bare bones in the beginning. Really bare bones. And I think everyone agreed, including Activision, that they went a little too heavy-handed with the microtransactions for the Eververse vendor. But at the same time, they used the similar approach in Destiny 1, where they started with a very bare bones experience. But what they've done amazingly well is responding to player feedback. And even though they make small steps at times, every step they make is a step forward.
Agreed.
So that is one thing I will credit Bungie with, is that they don't take any steps back. Or they don't really make sacrifices, always building towards a better product all around. And as far as the local impact, here in and around Albany, we are the home to Vicarious Visions. And they had a huge part in the, I don't want to call it a PC port, but delivering the PC version of the game. And they were also the main studio behind the Warmind expansion.
Right.
Which was received very well. So Vicarious Visions is owned by, or at least under the umbrella of Activision as well. So we don't know really what that means for Bungie, if they already have a working relationship with the Vicarious Visions or the other smaller studios, like you said, offloading some of the support. I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain that, but go ahead.
Yeah. And well, one of the things, like, cause we do a lot of merger and acquisition work as well, you know, at my company, and I get involved in that. You know, and a lot of things with the divestitures or when you're splitting off from a business entity, there's typically a transition period, and there's usually typically some sort of transition or business services agreement associated with that. My guess, my educated guess or lack of educated guess, depending on whether or not you like me, would probably be there would be some level of transition services for those developers that they might be relying upon. Whether or not they could independently contract subsequent to the relationship, that's a completely different story. But I also think if you look at one of the interesting wild cards here that I'm kind of curious to see what plays out with Bungie was the NetEase investment, right? You know, $100 million in June. And what is that? Is that for mobile? Is it for something else? Is that going to be used here? And so that's something we haven't really seen yet what they're going to do with that. And that could help offset some of the impact and maybe lead to some of those independent partnerships.
Well, definitely be watching, not just because I play Destiny on a nearly daily basis, but you know, what's great about Destiny is I can take a break from it for a few months to play some other game for a little bit, come back 2 months later and just pick up right where I left off. It's good to have that.
It really is, because it was funny because I was going to say something about Fallout 76 earlier, but that's another we probably don't want to crack open. You know, and I put that down after I got to level 25 in like November, and I haven't picked it back up yet.
Maybe for like a little extra segment later on or something. Poor Fallout 76.
Yeah, poor Bethesda. Anyway.
Interesting to see what's happening with Bungie on that. So, I mean, clearly they are not lacking in any of the creative, I don't even know what word I'm looking for. They're not lacking in the creative space. Or manpower. They've got tons of talent in that. I'm really excited to see where they push the storyline from here on out.
Well, and I think also, you know, there's precedent for this, right? When they broke away from Microsoft, you know, with the Halo, when that distribution agreement and publication agreement kind of went away, I think they were with them for like 8 years. They were still successful. I think if you look at Activision more as kind of a vehicle for them to kind of get to the point that they are, I think the biggest thing though that I would probably worry about is how much longer is Destiny 2 per se going to be at the forefront of their minds before they maybe want to launch something new like a Destiny 3 or whatever that's entirely theirs, right? Because it's right now it's a little bit of a shared IP and there's influence and how much of that do they want to continue with? And that's something I think we're going to have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of wait and see, but I mean, you got to mention it as a news article. That lots of stuff happening. A lot of implications surrounding this bit.
Agreed.
All right. Last geekery article. Game of Thrones. Final season. We're finally getting some trailers for it. Or a trailer and a teaser. Have you been following the Game of Thrones madness?
So I'm gonna reveal something here that might get my nerd card half punched and the rest revoked.
Just wait. Let me
get it out first. Don't judge. Okay. So I've been through the first two seasons of Game of Thrones. Absolutely loved it. I'm planning on watching all seven seasons. I actually have them in Blu-ray. They're sitting right next to my desk as I just knocked something over. So I'm planning on watching them between now and the new season starting. So I am going to catch up. I have every intention to. The only reason I haven't stayed caught up is because there is so much good TV out there. And when you're have a wife and two children. That's not a show that comes up very often when the kids are awake. So I have to,
nope,
to balance. So
yeah, that could also bring up another great gamer dad conversation. I'm going to have you on again for just a gamer dad episode special feature or something.
I'd love to. I think that'd be great.
Oh, man. So I'm not really playing Destiny as much as I used to. I will play after my son has gone to sleep. And the reason why I bring this up is because a few nights ago, I'm not really concerned about the level of violence in most games. I'm more concerned with like prolonged intensity of the experience, but that's a whole nother discussion.
Right.
So I've played Destiny in front of him. He's now like two and a handful of, he's two at this point, but he's comprehending more and he's repeating more. He's in the whole, I'm a tiny tape recorder phase.
Oh yeah.
And I mimic everything. Yeah. We're in that phase right now. And I play as a warlock, and the warlock's melee attack is an open palm strike.
Okay.
And I go and I punch something, and I hear little Jacob go, push, push. And I'm like, and we're done here, because I do not need you doing that at daycare.
No.
No.
So to give you a quick corollary, and I don't want to eat up your time, but one of the things that I used to watch when I'd get home late, and one of the things I used to watch was Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. And this was when my oldest was so little, he would sit in his little bouncy seat in front of the TV, and it was just pretty lights and colors, right?
Oh, sure.
And so I'd watch things, and Kerry Means would appreciate this, who was at Empire last year, and he's been around a while. You know, he played Frylock, or it was the voice of Frylock. Aqua Teen Hunger Force was one of the things I would watch. Let's just say once Joe, that's my oldest, started quoting Meatwad, that was the end of watching Aqua Teen Hunger Force in front of my child. So I completely understand.
Yep. Respect to the artist. Love the show. I'm not watching it in front of my kid.
Exactly.
And I like to think that even the actors and the talent and the producers and everyone involved with certain shows would probably agree with those sentiments. Oh, like, you know, absolutely. What? You're right. My show is not intended for small children.
I'm pretty sure somebody's calling social services right now to report us. So.
Yeah, just because it's animated doesn't mean that it's for children. So you've watched the first two seasons and you've missed out on
a lot. But go ahead and talk. I've been staying away from the trailers, but I know there's a lot of excitement here. So.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of excitement because it really is the past couple of seasons, in my humble opinion, they've been doing a great job of wrapping up the storylines. Mm. So like individual story arcs have concluded at this point. And the people are coming back. Everyone right now is on their way to Winterfell. Like everyone is on their way to Winterfell. We've had battles with the Ice King north of the Wall. And yeah, the White Walkers are coming. Daenerys and Jon are on a boat on their way back up. Things are finally coming together and storylines, not necessarily combining, but like I said, these story arcs have concluded and we're moving the entire story in general into its final conclusions, which I think is great because, and I've mentioned this on previous episodes, I get really frustrated when networks just run a show into the ground and they just keep creating more and more story arcs to keep it going for another season. And then by the time it's no longer profitable, they just kind of hack the head off of every story arc. Just like, and we're done here. And we're done here. And there's no proper
Shield. Sorry.
For me, it was Sons of Anarchy in particular. It's the one that came to mind.
Well, and I think that's the thing, because I think as fans, right, of any show like this, you know, we're conditioned to either have that happen or it's, oh, my God, it got canceled and we didn't even know it was coming. Right.
Right.
So it is so nice to have like, OK, there's obviously forethought and preparation. It's ending the way they want it to end. That's a rare treat that I can absolutely understand and appreciate the satisfaction that comes along with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so very excited to see this. It's been a long wait since the last season concluded. And there's only, I think they said like six episodes or something like that.
Yeah, the last one was when? Like June of 2017 or something? It was
I think so.
A while ago.
Yeah, so Very few episodes. I'm sure they're all going to be over an hour long. We'll see when that comes through.
Yep. So I've got some time to get through the Blu-rays, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'll report back.
All right. Good to hear. Good to hear. Last bit of news, and I'm going to try to do a little segment that I'm going to be calling Capital Region Unlocked. So it's a little play on we refer to the geographical area in and around Albany, New York as the Capital Region, and the concept of games being, or just digital content being, region locked. So I like to think I'm clever, and I'm going to call this Capital Region Unlocked. And I'm going to try to focus on gaming news and happenings in and around the Capital Region of New York. And one thing that I wanted to touch on earlier, but like I said, holidays and family and stuff like that, family got in the way. But there's going to be an esports conference here in Albany, also at the Capital Center. And what's impressive about this, not only is it in the new Capital Center in Albany, which is gorgeous and huge and beautiful, it's also part of the MAC, the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. So this is like legitimate collegiate sports, esports conference coming to the Capital Region. What's your take? Do you follow esports much at all?
I do to an extent, primarily because my kids started watching like on Disney XD when they would have some of the tournaments and so forth.
Oh, nice.
It's a huge step. I know there esports aren't real sports. I know there's a whole contingent associated with that. Mm-hmm. I think if you broaden the definition of sports and maybe remove some of the athleticism component of it, I think it's very much a sport, right? So as we think about hand-eye coordination, mm-hmm. the tactical nature of the engagements, I mean, this isn't just about button pressing. It's when do you do it and how do you remember, you know, moving through combinations and scenarios. And there's a lot that goes into this. I think it's great that it's getting the recognition it's getting. Honestly, this is probably something that from a competitive nature, a lot of these players and individuals probably wouldn't have another alternative for, just putting that out there. But I also think it's great that Albany's getting as much recognition as it is. When I visited there for Empire State, I was impressed by the city. I know a lot of people who have taken classes and have gone to like Rensselaer and other things of that nature. I think it says a lot about Albany being on the map, especially as it relates to things like, you know, gaming and gaming development and so forth. So it's really good to see.
Yeah, we are in this odd position geographically, I think, where we've got New York City about a 3-hour drive south of us. We've got Boston, mm-hmm. a 3-hour drive to the east. We've got Montreal, 3-hour drive to the north. And we have Syracuse and Buffalo to the west. And then we have Albany like right smack in the middle. And we're just a crossroads, really. Like, it's a fairly small city. Like, we're not like a huge, thriving metropolis. We're not that. It's hard to be a metropolis this close to, you know, one of the largest cities on the planet of New York City. It's kind of tough to compete with that. But with that, we're still, I can, you know, say only a 3-hour drive north of New York City. So it's still possible for a day trip, either from Albany to New York or New York to Albany, still possible for a day trip. And you can have access to resources and a talent pool that is not at New York City prices.
Exactly. And that's actually really hard, because having done technical recruitment in the past, and I worked in the city for 12 years, and it was funny because when I moved to Connecticut and working in and out of Stanford, the complaints of some of the other areas in Fairfield County in Connecticut, Danbury and Shelton and so forth, how hard it was to recruit good technical talent away from the city. But to your point, because of the strategic location, I mean, you're at the crossroads of what, 90 and 87. Correct. So you're off major highways. It's easy to get to. It's centrally located. There's a lot going on. And, you know, again, cost of living, not so bad. So.
Nah, not really. You know, we have our more expensive neighborhoods, of course. Every region, every area has that. But it ain't New York. in New York.
I won't even tell you how much I paid for what ended up being a space big enough for a sleeping bag and a toilet. So it's I completely understand.
No matter how many times this comes up, I always have to tell like the few like same stories, because I've had cousins and my brother lived in New York City for a while, like in Manhattan proper. And one of the apartments I helped move my brother into, I looked around and I'm like, dude, where's your closet? Like, he did not have a closet in his room. And that's when I remembered that there were two armoires like in his living room space. Like, oh my God, your closet is in the living room. Seriously?
Oh, geez. But that's life.
That's it's funny. New York. That's New York City.
I had a friend who literally lived out of a duffel bag for years just so he could have a Manhattan zip code. Yeah, because he couldn't afford anything else. No. Everything he had was in a bag. So,
yeah. So good to see all this stuff happening in and around Albany. I'm going to try to, you know, stay on top of it, stay in the middle of it all, and see where all this goes. But yeah, so later on, it's the announcement of the conference. So it's got to have a
March 30th to the 31st. It looks like
it is. Thank you. So yeah, March going to be at the Albany Center. So can't wait for that to come through.
Sounds like a good opportunity for you to do some more interviews as well. Get on site. Oh,
absolutely. I mean, I bought my tickets as soon as this thing was announced. I'm like, yes, I want to go. I'm going to be there. I'm going to try for more press passes as this year goes on. We'll see what happens. You know, it's steady growth, ever so slow, but you know, steady growth. See what comes through. But yeah, I'll definitely be there. Absolutely. Awesome. All right, we're going to move into some listener questions right now. And I send out tweets and Facebook posts before every episode. If you happen to catch them, please respond. We'd love to talk to you. Love to hear what's going on in the community. And even in the meantime and in between time, if you got any questions or suggestions for the show, let me know. I stay active on Twitter at VGXTPod. On Facebook, or you can email me directly at videogamecrosstalk@gmail.com. So we're going to start up with some listener questions. And Aaron Sturdivant of the Horror with Sir Sturdy podcast, he's got a trio of questions. So okay. Thanks, Aaron. So we're going to work our way down this first one. And these all seem to be directed towards you, Ray. So okay. Have you done any horror cosplays? And if not, what would they be? Or if not, would you? Excuse me. Right. I can read.
Well, it's funny because at this point, I'm not sure I can. Aaron, thanks for the questions. So I have not yet. And I think part of that is just finding the right one for one thing. Because, you know, I grew up in the era of Michael Myers and Freddy Krueger and others. And even before that, Rosemary's Baby. And I was a huge John Carpenter fan, Wes Craven and so forth. I think the challenge is if I do one, and I would. At some point, it would have to be something unique that I haven't seen yet. And I just haven't really narrowed that one down. The other thing is, as my kids get older, I have a little more free play with that. It's one thing to be working on a costume, walking through the house, and it's a superhero. It's another thing if it wasn't. So stay tuned and something might pop up there, but nothing yet.
Okay. The second question is, what has been your most difficult cosplay?
You know, it's funny because you would think some of the builds I've done have been fairly detailed and technical. You'd think it'd be one of those. It actually, one of the most difficult ones for me was probably the simplest. It was Casey Jones from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I actually did it last year for New York Comic Con. Because it was so simple in terms of sweatshirt, sweatpants, and I was basing it off the 80s cartoon Casey Jones, the figure Casey Jones. Mm-hmm. Because it was so simple, I felt like I had to do so much more to really nail the detail and the character It made a lot of I went through like even just four different pairs of sweatpants because I wasn't comfortable with how I cut the knees. Right. It was that kind of thing because I just felt like there wasn't much that could hide it or take away from it. It was there to be just and that really was the most difficult for me, I think.
Interesting. So because it was so simple, there was no room for error.
Right.
Is that a?
Yeah. And okay. I felt like I really, in order to capture the character, it had to be as close to spot on as I could get it. Whereas in some of the other ones, there's so much going on sometimes that it, you know, I can afford a little bit of leeway because it takes away from maybe where that oh, I didn't give that much attention to it. This one, mm-hmm. not so much. So.
And the last question from Aaron, do you plan on playing the Resident Evil 2 remake?
Yeah, I almost bought it last night. I'm a little bit on the fence. I might wait until the cost comes down, because I'm also a frugal gamer when I do okay. But I remember playing the original Resident Evil when it came out, Resident Evil 2.
So scary.
I loved that game. And then when you're walking down that hallway in the police station, the dogs first burst through the window on the side, and you're like, I screamed. Yeah. I have really fond memories that I look forward to playing the remake, but I think I'm going to wait for the cost, especially because I kind of know where the story goes, right? I want to see how they've enhanced it, but
That's the thing with remakes and remasters. I would purchase them strictly for the nostalgia sake, but I mean, you know the story. You kind of know where things are going. It's great to be able to replay it and not have to cringe through the rough graphics of some of the early 3D development. Ooh, looked amazing when we were playing it back in, you know, 90 whatever, but looking back on it, ooh, does not hold up too well.
No.
All right. Next two questions we get. Well, one of the questions we already kind of answered, but this is from the Monster Closet podcast. What's an easy cosplay for someone to get started?
You know, that's, I'm not going to get specific per se with a character, but I think, you know, generally if you want to get interested in cosplay, don't be afraid to just buy something off the shelf and maybe kind of start to tweak it and modify it. I think a lot of times people get wrapped up in this idea that cosplay has to be this huge artistic project. And craft foam and paints and sewing and whatever. I can't sew, by the way. I can stitch. I can't sew. But don't be afraid to just take something off the shelf. I'll give you one. My wife always wants to do New York Comic Con with me. So we do a costume. We always did a family costume every year. We've been doing family costumes.
Yay!
So we've done Star Wars and Gravity Falls and Adventure Time. And this past year we did the Turtles. And, you know, I made most of everything except her costume, because I know she's going to wear it once, maybe twice for Halloween. But so what she did, she just spent time in research and found what looked close enough to be April O'Neil clothes, and then bought a cheap wig and got some boots, and we painted them white. And that was her first costume for that. And it worked. And in fact, she got more attention than I did. There's one guy who was like, "You're my 9-year-old fantasy come to life." And I'm like, "Okay, we're leaving."
But calm down there, homie.
Right. But with that said, you know, I think don't be afraid to just start with something off the shelf and move from there. It's a journey. It's not a sprint. So.
Yeah. And I guess there's a thing called like the casual cosplay. You don't need to go full professional scale.
No.
First time. As long as people get it, or as long as, you know, you're proud of what you created. Like for my Handsome Jack cosplay, I hit up Salvation Army with a profile pic of Handsome Jack. I'm like, okay, I need jeans that are approximately this color. I need this color shirt, this color vest, another shirt of this color. Okay, let's see what I can work with this. And then, you know, looked at it a little bit more. Okay, he's got this little device that clips up on his lapel. Let's see what I can make out of cardboard and tape it together. It just, like you said, grab something off the shelf and then tweak it a little bit to get it to where it needs to be.
And if you want, and if you're concerned about getting noticed, just do something original that people don't see a lot of, you know, because if you do that, that's going to stand out more so than, I've seen people with literally what is probably a $25 costume, but it was a really original idea, and it puts everybody else to shame because it's something nobody has seen before.
You know, point to that. While I was at the Empire State Con, there was a guy walking around. He had blue face makeup on and like a Smurf hat. I'm like, what are you doing?
I know him.
He's like, I'm hipster Papa Smurf. I've been Smurfing since before it was cool. I'm like, oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah. And he does like Bob Ross and others. And, you know, it's funny because at the end of the day, it's not a significant investment in the costume itself. He'll probably be the first one to tell you, but it's a unique spin on the character and people love it and they get attention, and it looks
hysterical.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay, and the Monster Closet had a second question. How will Bungie leaving Activision affect Destiny? I think we covered that pretty well.
I think so.
Earlier on. All right. And Stories from a Bar podcast. Thanks, Chris, for writing in. And this is an interesting question. What's been the most satisfying Cosmere cosplay that you've done?
Oh, this is a little bit harder because a lot of times the satisfaction for this, it's twofold. One is just completing it and seeing the vision come together. But there's always a moment when I have an interaction, typically with a fan or somebody who has come up to the costume or whatever. And that reaction is what makes that costume satisfying to me. And one that stands out and still stands out in my head. I did the Simon Petrikov Ice King probably 3 years ago or something. But I did the full makeup, prosthetics, beard, everything. And I was at New York Comic Con and there was a girl dressed up as Fiona. And I don't know if you've ever watched Adventure Time, but Fiona is kind of a fictional female version of the main character, Finn.
I need to. I've seen too many GIFs and references to it, but unfortunately, I've just never been able to catch it.
Yeah, well, the good part is it's so short and it's on Hulu now. You can catch up pretty quickly, but it's got a really deep understory that's really emotional, really heavy, but it's really satisfying as well. But I went up to her in full costume. My wife was with me. She was doing Marceline, who was another character, and she was looking at this book called The Enchiridion for the show. And so I went up and my best Ice King voice was like, I hear that book's pretty good. She turned around and her mother was there too. And she just, her eyes went into tears and she's like, oh my God, Simon, I love you. And she like hugged me and her mom was just like saying, how special it was for her to be there. I found out later she was special needs, but for her to be there and to see the character and just how nice it was to, and that moment, just, it's one of those, like, that's when it's real. It doesn't matter how many pictures people take or how many times you get pulled aside for a podcast. It's when you have that tiny little interaction that you're probably never going to have again with that person. And to see that level of emotion and care for that character that you're trying to bring to life, that's what makes it satisfying.
Yeah, I would agree with that. To have that level of that deep of an emotional connection or response, that's got to be something beautiful to witness.
Yeah, and it's only happened, it's been a handful of times, but that one stands out the most, and I will never forget that. It's been hard to put that costume on again, just because it's never going to be the same. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to get that same reaction, or at least with that same intensity as the first time that it happened.
Yeah, and I almost feel like I'm doing it a disservice just to wear it again. Yeah, it's like, this was okay, mic drop, we're done,
So. Is that right? Okay. All right, so we're going to move on to the final five questions. I ask every guest five questions at the end of every episode that range from irrelevant to irreverent. The first two are always the same, and the last three have a theme. Here we go. So, first question, and if you've listened to this podcast before, you know what the first two are. Coffee or tea?
Coffee for sure. Dark roast or cold brew.
Okay. Do you take a black?
Actually, a little bit of almond milk and some stevia now. It's, I'm becoming one of those guys now, it seems, but.
One of those guys. Hey, whatever gets the caffeine into you. All right, question number two. Do you play any tabletop games?
Not as much as I used to. The ones that I do play now are more the card-based games, Munchkin, some Catan, those kind of things, because it's easy for my kids to get engaged with those. Gotcha. So those have really been where I've gravitated towards.
Yeah. I keep looking at games that I might be able to play with my son, but then I have to remind myself that he's only two.
It will happen. It will happen.
It definitely will happen. And we've got a whole list of games. I mean, I'll give a shout out to, I think they're called Gameright, is a gaming company that a lot of. We have three of their games, Dragonwood, Forbidden Island, and I just picked up Quix. It's a dice game, kind of like Yahtzee-ish. Yeah.
We have the first two. I haven't tried that third one yet.
Okay. I just picked it up. It was cheap over at Target. It was cheap. It's kind of sort of like Yahtzee in a way. So it's got some colored dice and some other little mechanics, but really good. So we've got a few things to prepare for once he develops the cognition to be able to play some of these games. So really looking forward to that.
Good.
Nice. All right. And now into the final three. And the theme of this episode is refreshments. And that is because you just got tied up in my first episode of the year where I've refreshed and revamped a bunch of things.
Okay.
I also just received, like today I posted them. I commissioned a new logo and social media headers from a professional graphic designer.
I did see those pop up. They look great, by the way.
Thank you. And I'll extend the thanks to Bill Watson is the guy's name. I'll add his Twitter handle to the show notes. The first round of my header and logo was just me fumbling my way through GIMP. And it worked. It worked for as long as it. But like, all right, if I want to take this to the next level, I need something, someone who knows what they're doing.
Yep.
Do this. So that's what I got. Thing looks fantastic. So the theme is refreshments. So question number three, what is your snack of choice at a theater?
My snack of choice at a theater is actually dark chocolate Raisinets.
Okay. Do you pass on the popcorn usually?
Yeah, my kids are bigger on the popcorn, especially heavy with butter. I usually just do the Raisinets, and I try to hide them to the side because if the kids get wind that I have them, then it's a battle all the entire movie. That keeps
them, so. Listen, kids, when you start paying for your own snacks, maybe we can get something different.
Get a job.
Question number four. Speaking of refreshing, have you ever spammed the F5 key on a website waiting for a news update?
Yes, as well as for tickets. even though it always tells you not to, I am guilty of that. Or having multiple browsers on multiple devices and refreshing those multiple times thinking it'll help, but yes.
Hey, we do what we have to do to get these done. All right, final question. So, of course, I had to look some weird stuff up on the internet. So would you consider any of these bizarre spa treatments? So first one, we have a snake massage, and that's where basically you let snakes crawl over you.
Pass.
Hard pass on that one. Another one we have here, and I recently actually learned of this. There is a facility, I guess I'll call it, that offers this in the capital region. It's called cryotherapy. Have you?
Yes.
So that's a yes. Not only a yes, but yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
So describe it then.
So it's funny because I've practiced Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 12 years. I have a black belt in martial arts and whatnot. And so a lot of the guys that I train with were trying this as a recovery method. And they actually had a truck that came to the gym at one point where you could kind of get, a free treatment to see what it was like. And it's essentially just, it's a round chamber that you step into. Your head is exposed like from the shoulders up. And it's, below freezing temperatures inside. So you step in and you're in your underwear. And the whole idea is that, essentially the cold helps with muscle recovery and that kind of thing. It's similar to like if you do like a dunk in cold water or an ice bath, which I know guys who've done that. It's an experience I've tried once. I don't know if I would do it necessarily again, because I don't know if the benefit is worth, that's just to quote George Costanza, the shrinkage involved and so forth. But it's.
Well, I'm looking at this little brief description, and it's temperatures of -110 Celsius or 166 Fahrenheit. Like, this isn't just like an ice bath.
No.
I mean, I get the ice bath.
Yeah.
This is like taking it way farther.
Yes.
And they say only for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's a very short period of time, but you still feel it long after you come out. but it really is. It's like a wraparound cylinder. Your head is up, and it's funny because it gets so cold, like you see the mist and the steam. It's almost like you can't even see yourself below it. It's like, almost like a bad horror movie at that point. and then they drop the temperature down and there you go. So
And last one, they're describing this as a diamond blowout. And just the fact that this even exists, I have to bring it up. So Harrod's Urban Retreat Spa in London knows that diamonds are a girl's best friend. Clients in search of smooth, glimmering locks headed to the salon to receive a diamond and meteorite dust-infused shampoo and condition, complete with a blow dry.
Wow. So cost aside, I think I'm going to stick with my Head and Shoulders on that one.
Yeah, treatment costs just $500. But you get to keep the leftover shampoo and conditioner.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm going to pass. But my wife might actually be into that one because she's had the traditional blowout. So I can only imagine how she would react to a diamond-infused one. So,
all right. Well, you know, if you ever do some overseas travel across the Great Pond, you know, it's just a little me time.
There we go.
For a diamond blowout.
All I'm going to say is if I end up paying for that, I'm going to have to get something pretty nice in return. So,
yeah, we're going to exchange on that one. All right, and that is all the time we have for this episode. Time for end of show plugs. You can find show notes for this and all the previous episodes at videogamecrosstalk.com, as well as all the social media contacts and the occasional blog posts. Or you can follow me around on Twitter, Instagram, PS4, and Twitch at HyperSyntax. It's HYP3RSINT4X. As for my guest, Ray, where can our beautiful listeners follow you around?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, both at ForceWorks1. That's ForceWorks Cosplay, and Cosplay is the brand that I operate under. And I'll also hopefully be and should be at Empire State Comic Con in Albany in April. That should be my first con really on the season. So, you know, hopefully if anybody's there, stop in, say hello. And it's your neck of the woods, so hopefully I'll see you there as well.
All right. Sounds great. And finally, if you are a gamer or know a gamer that wants to talk some tech and science news, let me know. Do you know of some tech news you'd like to hear discussed? Do you have any other general questions that you'd like to hear answered on the show? Send an email to videogamecrosstalk@gmail.com or tweet at the show using the hashtag AskVGXT and give me the deets on what's going down. Please don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share this podcast all over your social media accounts. And it can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and pretty much every other third-party podcast service. One last time, thank you for hanging out with us. And Ray, thank you so much for joining me.
It was my pleasure. I am sorry I probably broke your resolution on trying to keep these a little bit shorter in the time, rather verbose. But
well, you know what? We'll see what we can do about that in editing.
But with that said, thanks again. And anytime, I'd love to be back on. So,
all right. And in the words of Bill Vaughn, an optimist stays up until midnight to see the new year end. A pessimist stays up to make sure the old one leaves.